opening showroom for the last 5 years. I was thinking of changing the pattern, and then there's something that happened. Erev Yontif. And I decided that I'm going to remain with the pattern, and we may even have ideas of significance. And I'll explain. I don't usually do this, but Erev Yontif, I took my car from my house to the Makolet. Now, my house is number 16 Agassi. The Makolet is number 25. Now, that's a shun and a harbor. I've been opposed for years using elevators. I walk wherever I can walk. But since I had to go to the fruit and vegetable store, which was next to the Makolet, and I assumed that I was going to have to bring a lot of packages home, so I took my car. After the Ben Shalom, I get into the car, and the radio is on Radio Kol Chai. Mm-hmm. Radio Kol Chai. And the fellow begins with a word from the Kotzke Rebbe, and he finishes it just as I get to the Makolet. It was a beautiful word of the Kotzke. The Kotzke Rebbe said the following: there are holy people who saw the Ushpizen, the guests that come into the Sukkah, Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, David. There were holy people who saw the Ushpizen. Kotzke said, I never saw the Ushpizen, but because our rabbi said that they come to visit us in the Sukkah, I believe that they are in the Sukkah. And he also said, believing may even be greater than seeing. So all of a sudden, that triggered a major association. Some of you who are my students may have remembered that I think it was about 10, 12 years ago, I had made a definite decision that I'm going to clean off my desk. There on the desk, I see a calendar from 1986, and this is somewhere around 1996. I obviously don't need this, and with a sense of real decision, I take it, that diary, throw it into the garbage can. Done. But we're Americans. We collect junk. And I thought it was too hasty of an act for me. Maybe there was something there that I missed. I bent down and I took the 1986 calendar out of the garbage can. And I opened it up. It was a calendar that had aphorisms down at the bottom of the page. And flipping through it, they what I see over there. Marshall McLuhan said, I wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't believed it. Right? I'm going to say it again so that it can make its way into your kishkat. I wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't believed it. I remember that morning I went to shul. I was very, very upset. Azar gute Wort! I mean, we are raised as children that seeing is believing. Along comes Marshall McLuhan and he says, no, it doesn't work that way. I see only because I believe. So I'm very upset. What are you talking about? Our rabbis, great scholars of Israel, couldn't come up with something that Marshall McLuhan was able to come up with. It was the month of Elul. A whole davening, I'm upset. Then all of a sudden, at the end of davening, LeDavid, Lulei he'emamti lirot b'tuv Hashem be'eretz Chayim. If I would not have believed it, I would not have seen the goodness of God in the land of the living. Ah! And then I just look up. I have a beautiful parochas in my shul in Har Nof, and emblazoned on the parochet is the pasuk, Zekeli va'anvehu elokiyavi va'adamamenu. What Jews said at the Red Sea, this is my God, I will make a dwelling place for him. Elokiyavi, the God of my father, I will raise and uplift him, I will exalt him. Famous Rashi over there. A maidservant at the sea saw more than the great prophets did. They were able to point and say, Zekeli va'anvehu, this is my God. Why was it necessary to say, Elokeyavi, the God of my father? Who needed that? We see him. We experience it. To which Rashi says, Lo ani tchilat ha-kedushar, not the beginning of all this sanctity, elamuch zeket v'omedet li kedushato v'elokuto alai mimei avotai. It didn't start with me. His divinity and his sanctity is something that's with me from the days of my fathers. You know what Rashi is saying? You know what Klal Yisrael is saying? You know why we saw God at the Red Sea? Because we are the descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Because we believed, we were able to see. We wouldn't have believed, we wouldn't have seen. So the Kotzke says, I didn't see the Ushpizin, but I believed that they come into the Sukkah. And believing may be a great deal more powerful than seeing. What have I done here for the last 5 years? What I've done here for the last 5 years is I've said that when the Ushpizin, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, what do they come? They come into the Sukkah. For what? What purpose? There has to be a purpose to it. I believe that the purpose is that they come to give us a message. They come to tell us something. And if we think about it, we may very well see that year by year, they have a message. It's a different message every year. Different message every year. So I want to talk this year about a number of the significant messages that I heard from the Ushpizin, the holy guests that come into the Sukkah. By the way, if you're wondering, I never did clean up my desk. Number one, all of you Ushpizin came in this year. It was a bad year, and they were sad. There may be some light moments, but they were sad. Yitzchak especially. Yitzchak more than all of the rest. God tells him, Gur Boretz Hazos, live in this land. Shchon Boretz, dwell in the land that I will say unto you. The Medrash says, Shchon, build a shchunah, build a neighborhood. Shchon, bring down the divine presence. Do you know where God said that to Yitzchak? Aza, Plishtim, Shkatif, Shchon Boretz, dwell here. So Yitzchak is a wipeout. But there are some light moments. Maybe we'll start with a light moment. It is non-Simcha Sein. Avraham Avinu is going to have a major message at the end of this year, but he comes in and he is just plain absolutely full of joy. First night, he comes in the first night. Why is he full of joy? Because he read the Jerusalem Post. And in the Jerusalem Post, he saw an ad. Make Aliyah without packing a bag. Introducing Express Aliyah, a Nefesh B'Nefesh program, in cooperation with the Mizrach HaPnim and the Jewish Agency. All this without standing in line at government offices. You understand? Avraham Avinu, it took those Jews 4,057 years to finally save us from the clutches of the Mizrach. I don't know how it works now, but I remember when I came out on the yard, the first thing, your status was temporary resident, and then you had to go back to the Mizrach HaPnim, and you had to change your status to permanent residence and get citizenship and all of the rest. After my first experience at the Mizrach HaPnim, I'm not going back there anymore. Come on. Anyway, I start going out of the country to take a look at my passport. They say, yeah, that's a rich lakesh in Misrad HaPenim. You have to go to Misrad HaPenim. You have to change the status. 3-4 years, by the fourth year already, they were getting very upset with me, and I was concerned that they might not sure. I wasn't worried that they won't let me out. I was worried that they won't let me in. So finally, the big day comes, and usually when you have to go to the Misrad HaPenim, in my days, pre-nefesh, you have to make sure that day you're not working. No work that day, because you can't tell how many hours you're going to have to sit in line until you finally get there. Anyway, I come to the Misrad HaPenim that day. My shas, my rambam, the whole bit, all time. I'm there for a while, you know, we have breakfast, my lunch. I sit down, and a very familiar fella sitting next to me, Natan Sharansky. So I tell him, Natan, what are you doing here? So he says, I have to change my status. So then he asks me, what are you doing here? I tell him I have to change my status. And then I say to him, what took you so long? So he says, waiting in line at the Misrad HaPenim is worse than the gulag. It was a fascinating wait, I have to tell you the truth. It was a very, very fascinating wait. And we finally did make it. It took a few hours until we got in. I was amazed that my wife remembered the name of the fellow when you got into his office. Then you were either made or you were broken. Shoshani was his name. You should remember Shoshani. And we see Rav Lavinu comes in and he says, it's unbelievable. You can finally make Aliyah precisely the way I did. I didn't even have to show a passport on that. I didn't have to have any forms filled out in quadruplicate that are going to be stapled together with a master staple. I didn't have to bring 20 pictures and then find out that I didn't have enough pictures. I just walked into Eretz Yisrael. That's the light moment. That's the light moment. Tonight is going to be David. Tonight is David?
Yes.
Tonight is David. I'll tell you, David also has had a very difficult time of it the last few years, but he comes in smiling into the sukkah. And I'm going to tell you exactly when he comes in smiling. And I'm going to give you a little background that's worthwhile for you to know. There are two schools of archaeology in this country. There are the minimalists and the maximalists. They are also called by other names. The maximalists are from the American school of Foxworth Albright. The minimalists, Catherine Kenyon, English. The godel of the minimalists is Israel Finkelstein, who received Pras Yisrael last year. One of the major theses of Israel Finkelstein is, chances are not that David and Shlomo absolutely never existed. Never existed. And if they did exist, this was no great kingdom as described by Tanakh. It may be nothing more than some kind of a little tribal group, I don't know, the Apaches, the Mohawks, Gornish Begornish. It may come as a surprise to you, but the minimalists are the ones who say, and they want to prove archaeologically, that Tanakh is simply not true. It's all myth and it's all legend. And for this he got Pras Yisrael. So David has been in the archaeological doghouse now for years. A terrible thing, but David HaMelech didn't exist. Shlomo was nothing. Sorry, he never even existed. There was an article a few years ago, I made a real study of this. A fellow by the name of Zev Herzog. Zev Herzog is a Talmud Muvik and a Chaver of Israel Finkelstein. And he makes it, let me just read a few sentences. Following 70 years of intense excavations in the land of Israel, archaeologists have found out that patriarchs are legendary. They're myth. The Israelites did not sojourn in Egypt or make an exodus. They didn't conquer the land. Neither is there any mention of the empire of David and Solomon, nor of the source of the belief in God of Israel. These facts, now Herzog is very upset. Zev Herzog, doesn't that sound like a good missionary? Herzog and Finkelstein are such Köpfchen Blicke. I don't know what else to call them. Anyway, he says, these facts, that they all didn't exist, the Tanakh is myth, these facts, my chutzpah, you know, I'm getting more upset as I read it. These facts have been known for years, but Israel is a stubborn people, and no one wants to hear about it. I'll tell you, Mi Kan for Yisrael, and he has a whole long article, I'm going to read it. At the end of the article, he complains again. Anything that was brought as proof was simply, they've rejected it, there is no such thing, there was nothing. The archaeology of the land of Israel is completing a process that amounts to a scientific revolution in its field. It is ready to confront the findings of biblical scholarship and of ancient history. But at the same time, listen to this nut. But at the same time, we are witnessing a fascinating phenomenon in which all this is simply ignored by the Israeli public. Many of the findings mentioned here have been known for decades. The professional literature in the spheres of archaeology, Bible, and history of the Jewish people have addressed them in dozens of books and hundreds of articles. Nevertheless, these revolutionary views are not penetrating the public consciousness. Meek and unclean Israel. But Finkelstein received Prasi Israel. Dovra Melech, well, they just wrote him out of history. A few weeks ago, all of a sudden, you remember 6-7 years ago, the Arabs were digging on Harabayat, 20,000 tons of earth were removed from Harabayat, 20,000 tons. And we were all wondering, why does the government commit this? I remember speaking then that Churban Bayit Sheni is going on right now. 20,000 tons. It took 6 years until a group of archaeologists got permission to sift through the 20,000 tons. A few weeks ago, they made the dramatic announcement, which was heralded in the papers, Drishat Shalom, best regards, Malchus based of it. They found something from first Beit HaMikdash. Now at first, of course, it was a little problematic. They found a signet ring that had three letters that they were able to decipher at that point. The last three letters of a name, Yud-Heh-Vav. I was scared stiff if they find that the first letters were Nun, Tav, Nun, Natan, then they're going to say this is just a political ploy. Netanyahu, understand, is coming up from the... So it turns out that he found out the rest of the name. Yehochal ben Shelem Yahu, mentioned in Yirmiyahu. All of a sudden, the archaeological world was shaken over it. Since then, in Ir David, they've begun to find a massive palace that goes back to the days of David HaMelech. Can you imagine how David feels when he comes into the sukkah though? You know what he's saying? I told you so. David Melech Yisrael Chai B'Kai. And you know what's even more he says? Harakam Anu Yochim. Yochim Anu Es Sukkahs David Tanofo. But there's something deeper here. What's deeper over here is a struggle that is tearing apart the neshama of this country. There are two communities here living side by side. Two communities that are as far as east and west. I call them the community of Medinat Yisrael and the people of Eretz Yisrael. There's a large group of people who came here to build an absolutely secular state with no zecher of Yiddishkeit, Medinat Yisrael. And then there are those of us, many of us, who came here because this is Eretz Yisrael. There's a big difference between Medinat Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. One of the differences is the following. This started at least 10 years ago at the time of Oslo II, and it has continued up until the last few months. There's always going to be some fellow who's going to make the brilliant statement, Chuslach Chalom Eretz Yisrael Hashlema. The dream of greater Israel is over. Finished. They're making a tragic mistake. They think because they were able to destroy Gush Katif and utterly, utterly destroy it, Chuslav, the end of Chalom Eretz Yisrael Hashlema. They don't understand there's another word. The other word is Chazon. There are those who came here for a Chalom, and there are those who came here because of a Chazon. The people of Medinat Yisrael, the secular community, came here because they had a dream of a homeland for the Jewish people. Anshei Eretz Yisrael came because of a chazon, a vision of the Nevi'im, a vision that is repeated time and time again in Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim. A chalom can turn into a nightmare. A chalom can have dvarim betelim, but a chazon, don't doubt about it that it's going to be fulfilled. We believe Emunah Shlema, we've gone through a difficult period. Oh, no. That's not the end of the story. The Chazon of Eretz Yisrael will be fulfilled, and Yitzhak Hashem in our time. There's a third difference between the people, on the one hand, Medina and Eretz, Chalom, Chazon. The people of Medinat Yisrael are concerned with the present, Akshav. They have disengaged themselves from the past. As Penis has said on a number of occasions, the past bores me. They want no connection with the past. This is a new Jew that's being created over here. A secular Jew. One who has no need for Yiddishkeit. On the contrary, that we left in Europe. The people of Medinat Israel are those who are only concerned with the present. They have divorced themselves from the past. And I'm ready to predict they're not going to have a future. We are the people of Eretz Israel. We are the people who are nourished by the chazon of Eretz Israel. We are inextricably intertwined with the past. We go back to Avraham, Yitzchak, Yankin, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, David, all of Jewish history. We have a past, and therefore we have a present, and we are guaranteed that we're going to have a future. By the way, that signet ring that they found is called a bula. A bula. And they've now found many of them, all taking us back to Bayit Dushan. We have not yet heard the responses of the Herzogs and Finkelsteins. But it's all part of this greater picture. There is a picture over here of a struggle that's taking place between two members of the Jewish people who inhabit the same country. But the goals, the objectives, the philosophies are so different. One cannot yet know how it will play itself out. All we know is what the end is going to be. We will emerge victorious in the end. what the price is going to be, how difficult it's going to be, how painful it will be, we don't yet know. So the Dovra Melech comes in, where they sense that a great deal has happened, but Dovra Melech is now again part of Jewish history. I had a strong feeling that Yaakov Avinu, when he came into the Sukkah this year, was quite upset. I'm going to say some difficult things now, and it may very well be that those who are guests from Chutz Laretz over here may get the wrong impression, but I will explain how you're supposed to understand this. Yaakov Avinu was the one, the end of Parshas Vayetze. He has fled from the home of his father-in-law. His father-in-law pursues him across the hills and dales of Mesopotamia into Gilad, and upon the mountain top of Gilad, he catches up with his son-in-law. There's a terrible confrontation that takes place between the two. If you've stolen my daughters, why did you have to steal my deities, my gods? And he goes through everything. Can you imagine? This is already the first Olam is coming back there, so they go through his suitcases from top to bottom. Yaakov Avinu, nothing is left. And when Lavan finds nothing, the greatest speech in all of Tanakh, and maybe one of the greatest speeches in all of literature. What did I do wrong? Why did you pursue me? I worked for you so faithfully during the day the sun burned me, during the night I froze. I never brought an animal that was wounded or dead to you. I paid for everything out of my own pocket. You changed the terms of my employment 100 times over. You know what we hear from Yaakov Avinu? The exploited of all history speak through Yaakov Avinu. He's the one who talks on their behalf. 20 years he suffered in the house of Lavan. Terrible employer. Terrible father-in-law. And finally he has been able to flee from the house of Lavan. Does it make any impression on Lavan when the great speech is all over? Habonim bonai, v'habonot benotai, the sons are my sons, the daughters are my daughters. V'choma asher atago, where whatever you see, it belongs to me. My students and the members of my congregation, they already know. They're quite well aware of one of my sins. I did not do tshuva on this sin, because I know I'm incapable of doing tshuva. I have sinned, I will sin again and again and again. I do it every morning. I go downstairs and I take the haaretz out of my mailbox. I'm a haaretz junkie. Understand? Can't help it. Here was the Erev Yom Kippur issue. Unbelievable. There was a whole section. And the front page of the section was the entire Vidu, Yashamnu, Bogadnu, Gozalnu, Dibarni Dovnu, the whole Yashamnu. And I thought to myself, my being a subscriber to the Haaretz has accomplished this for me. I open up and I start going through this section, and I tell you, it became me black before the eyes. There's an Yvonne Schwartz in the other.
Yeah.
What they do over there in that section is a listing of the sins of the commercial world in Eretz Yisrael. It's a terrible, terrible indictment. I take it back. the sins of the commercial world of Medinat Yisrael. I was shaking. 40% of the people in this country are paid below the minimum wage. It's against the law. 40% of people working are paid below the minimum wage. A large percentage of people who work in this country get their jobs through manpower organizations. In Hebrew, they're called kaplanei avodah. The people who get jobs through kaplanei avodah, everybody gets a part of their salary. The manpower office, the employer, and you know what's good about such employees? They get no benefits whatsoever. And you pay them below the minimum wage. Unbelievable. I was reading this. I didn't know what to do with myself. They say that all poverty could simply be erased from Eretz Yisrael if there would be honesty. The banks rip you off. Big business rip you off. The Misrad HaBitachon. Tzahal. Kol HaKavod LeTzahal. Biggest budget ever, like 52-53 billion shekel. So they had a list of all the stuff that was purchased that's useless. A few Apache helicopters that are Wert al Zetz and Dred cost about $600-700 million each. And then there's the chutzpah in one of the pages of the budget. They have this much for this, this needed, that, and then they have shonot, miscellaneous, petty cash, 140 million shekel. That's pretty nice, petty cash. What do you think? How do you think that would go over? 140 million shekel in that one page, unaccounted for. The Misrad HaChinuch makes new textbooks every year or two, and a family with 10 children, you understand, has to buy new textbooks at about 700, 800 shekel per kid every year, every 2 years. When we went to school, we sold our textbooks to the next year and the next year, 10 years! I can't tell you all of the horrible, horrible things. So you're thinking, I'll tell you number one, I never say this in Chutz Laaretz. Number two, for those who are chutznikim who are here, you know what it means? We need you here more than we ever needed you before. We need the honesty and the decency of religious people in business and Chutz Laaretz to come here and make a real difference. There's a tremendous amount of corruption. It pains me. You have no idea the extent to which it pains me. Yaakov Avinu is talking about this terrible corruption. Come here. There are families who are buying items they should never ever buy because they can't afford it. But he have all of the pirsumet. Everything you see over there is just encouraging you to buy, and buy. What do you think? You can buy a cell phone, I don't know, that sings, that dances, that does somersaults, and it's okay, you can pay for it over 10 years, 20 years, and they talk you into all sorts of nadushkeit, and it eats away at the budget of a family that should know better, but doesn't know better. The system is creating poverty. But you know what? All the money that should be going to the people who've been thrown out of Gush Katif, that hasn't gone to them yet. If that would never have happened, we could have wiped out poverty in this country forever. Yeah. That's painful enough.
Very painful.
Not as Avraham Avinu. I'm going back to Avraham Avinu. Because Avraham Avinu has a great deal to say. Because remember, the Ushpizim come in every night. David is coming tonight with Avraham, with Yitzhak, with Yaakov, with Moshe, with Aaron, all the rest of them. All the rest of them. Avraham Avinu had a very, very difficult time of it. Avraham Avinu was a revolutionary. Avraham Avinu, the Rambam describes, was raised in a community of idolaters, and he worshipped idols with them. And at a young age, he began to question and doubt. He went through years of terribly, terrible suffering and soul searching. He began to share his ideas with others. We can all paint the picture of what happened. There must have been people who were those who laughed at him. There were those who rejected him. There were those who paid absolutely no attention to him. And most probably there were times at which Avraham Avinu thought to himself, I don't know, is the whole world really wrong and unright? Hachov Koveya! The majority, they must know better. But that didn't satisfy him. He keeps pressing his case, and people are talking about this. They did this. He said, surely not. An invisible God created heaven. What's he talking about? What's he talking about? Avraham Avinu was persistent. Avraham Avinu, who starts off being the annoyance, is now perceived as a threat. The Rambam says his life is in danger. He went through terrible crises. You know what ultimately happened? Avraham Avinu emerged unscathed from the crisis. Not all crises are destructive. It'll take you a few minutes till you get. I think you get my point. And I'm going to tell you about a personal incident in my life and in the life of my family. I'm sure that not a single soul here is going to breathe it to anybody outside. When we came out of the yard, my wife was there. She'll most probably be very upset with me about what I'm going to say, but I've decided I'm going to say it. We came out of Aliyah about 24 years ago. It was August of 1982. I had left a very, very prestigious position in the United States of America, Rabbi Leon Gisel of West Hempstead. By the way, my successor, of course, had an even more prestigious position because he was taking Rabbi Gold's position. That was a joke. It was a community that was simply going to grow. And listen, we have one of the architects of that community, Rabbi Findel, is back there. This was a community that was growing. The night before I left on Aliyah, I approved the plans for a new shul that was going to quadruple the size of the shul. I'm always fond of saying, a few years after I came on Aliyah and I returned for a visit to West Hempstead, and one of the members of the shul says to me, Rabbi, since you left, the community doubled in size. So I said to him, and since I came to Arnulf, it grew 100 times over. So he says, then he understood that it didn't come out right. So he said, no, that's what I meant, Rabbi. I didn't really mean that. Rabbi, I didn't mean that. You know what I meant, though? I meant that you laid the foundations, you understand. I built one of the first airmen in America. I built a mikveh. And I brought in a kosher pizza place. With that unbeatable combination, this community was going to grow. By the way, I was just there a few weeks ago. 700 families. 700 families. One of the largest. I could have been the rabbi of one of the largest Orthodox congregations on the North American continent. So here is this great successful goal, comes on Aliyah. I'm not going to take you through the whole mess. A year and a half later, I was unemployed, a job, two or three kids ready for Shidduchim. The kaplan that I purchased an apartment from went broke. No job, no parnasa, no apartment. All the kids were in crisis. We were one big mess. And I'm thinking to myself, God Almighty, what did you do to your family? And one of my good friends, I said, you know, everybody has good friends, comes to me and says, God, your luck is that bad. If you decide to go back, you'll come to the airport and you'll find out they canceled the flight. So here it is. I'm a basket case. The worst part is that a very close friend, great psychologist, said, you need family therapy. Do you know what this meant to me? He was this great, successful, hotshot rabbi that was going to turn the United States upside down. Unemployed, no apartment, and he needs family therapy. Anyway, all right, so we got the family together. He suggested a therapist, and believe me, it was the biggest bazillion I ever went through in my life. I was bleeding inside. We went and we had one session. So the two youngest over there were kicking each other on the table. We went for a session. He called me and said, we have to come for another session, and maybe after that he may yet have advice for us. We went through the second session. I'm telling you, I was sabach nashtik. At the end of the session, this Filoni family therapist says to us, I want to tell you something. You're a healthy family. You're a strong family. You're going through a difficult time, but you're going to make it through. I'm not going to turn you into patients. We walked out, and we made it. Why am I telling you this? For the last few months, up until tonight, I don't know how many lectures there have been given throughout this city or this country during the course of the last number of months, the crisis of the Dati Lumi community. They're telling us we're in crisis. We're falling apart at the seams. We've suffered a terrible loss. We need to make a cheshbon hanefesh. Where did we go wrong? What did we do? Everybody's telling us, guys, you're sick. You're sick. I heard it tonight, believe me. Just a hint of it. I was ready to blow my stack, but I'm saving it for now. I want to tell you something, and I want you to listen very carefully to everything I'm going to say to you. The healthiest community in this country is the Dati Lumi community. And I'll tell you exactly why. There is no other community in this country that has created in the last 30, 35 years what this community has created. And you know what they keep telling you? By the way, the next time somebody says it to me, there's going to be real violence. It's enough. For 30 years, you've been just Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael. Isn't there another mitzvah? This is such stupidity, such vicious. And I'm going to explain to you why. Number one, the most creative institution, original, never existed in all of Jewish history. The Yeshivot Hesder were created in the last 30 years by the Dati Lumi community. It's the geography of the whole country from the Golan down to Eilat. Every major city and town in this country, whether it be Sderot or Ramat Gan or Kedumim or Elon Moher or Shiloh, you name it, there's a yeshivat hezder there. There never was such a thing as a yeshivat hezder. Not in Valozhin and not in Baranovich and not in Slabodka. A new creation. And I remember when they started, I didn't go back more than, I'm a little ancient. I started learning here in Yeshiva. The first time I came was 1955. And during the summer of 55, I went on a visit to Kibbutz Yavna. And in the kibbutz, with all these kibbutzniks running around, I see a very dignified gentleman with a long black coat. He looked, we're talking about Sukkah, he looked like a Yuvin in Sukkah, like a Greek in the tabernacles. I go over to the scene, I say, Shalom Aleichem. So he shows me a wooden building, and he says, I'm building a yeshiva there. I'm going to call it Kerem Biyavna. And I sat for an hour under a tree in the yid by the name of Rabbi Goldfinch, Zeichel Tzadik Levracha. Pioneering! Then following the Six-Day War, the yeshivat has there. I remember, some of my friends and I live in a number of worlds. Somebody tells me, well, the yeshivat has there, it's nothing but nothing. You don't have any Talmid Dichon, you don't have nothing. Where are all of your Babayim coming from? They're coming from Mir and Hebron and Panevish. You don't have it. I told him, mark this. I told him, talk to me again in 30 years. 30 years? We have created Talmidei Chachomim, Yorei Shamayim, people who are writing Sforim. We have created a community of Torah that's powerful, yes, and they're soldiers too. And they have officers too. Which other community in this country has created something as unique and creative as an original as that? And what about all the ulpanot of that country? And what about Machon Pua, Machon Psomet? I'll tell you even more. Thank God, I mean, I had a busy Shabbos, but I finally got to my Hatzofer. Today in the Sukkah. The Haaretz, sometimes I take it into the Sukkah, sometimes. Tel Aviv University. Tel Aviv University made a study. Who contributes and how much in Israeli society? The secular community, the number of people in the secular community that contribute to charity, to status, to all sorts of things, 29.7%. In the Mesorati community, it's slightly better, 33.8%. Haredim, 71.2%. Dati Leumi, 77%. The highest in the entire country. And you're going to tell us that we're only involved in Eretz Yisrael, we haven't done anything for 30 years. What rishus to say that? What rishus? And it's ignorance. And it's ignorance. They, Tel Aviv, they then studied also. Further proof how you want to know how cut off from society, the time devoted by youth for all sorts of voluntary undertakings. By far the highest percentages of the Yomi community. They're going to tell us that we're a bunch of sickos that have to make a cheshbon ha-nefesh, that we're falling apart at the seams. Nonsense! We're the healthiest and strongest community. We had a loss, of course we had a loss. Nobody's denying that we had a loss. I was falling apart at the seams 22 years ago also. Avraham Avinu, Eileen, I like to me and Avraham. Avraham Avinu also went through an extremely difficult time. Going through a difficult time doesn't mean that you're sick. What happens at the end? I remember when they were complaining over here. Remember that morning, beautiful picture on the front page of the Haaretz of backpackers who were making their way into Gush Katif, made their way through Tsar lines, or is it possible that there were soldiers who turned a blind eye? Hundreds of kids made it through. Why, I had Englert that went and came and came and went. What are you talking about? I had a grandmother from my shul in her late 70s, got into Gush Katif in the back of a truck covered by a blanket. I tell you all the stories how people got in and got out of that. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Right. What's the time devoted by youth to voluntary community service? The Dati Lumi community stands at the top, the very top of all of Eretz Yisrael. That day, when that picture appeared in the Haaretz, there was an item on the radio. I heard it on the 6 o'clock news, then I heard it at the 8 o'clock news, and I kept looking in the next day's newspapers, never saw it again. There was a report on the radio that there are 20,000 Israeli tarmila'im. Tarmila'im are backpackers. 20,000 backpackers in India. And they have become part of the community that's bringing drugs into India, and the Indian government is arresting them one after another. Misrata Chutz, let it be known, stay away from India. And here there are people who are condemning our backpackers. Do me a favor, Heather. Take a look at the difference between your backpackers and our backpackers. Our backpackers are fighting for Eretz Yisrael, and your backpackers are bringing drugs to India. We have a future, not them. Oh, so Rosh Kol will start rubbing me in our nose. Usually they watch themselves with me. But it starts up with me. Look what you did to your youth. Look what you did to your youth. You told them it wasn't going to happen. Hang hair, all of that. They told me, Yediria Yakar, when one of my Enochlith told me after the destruction of Gush Katif, when one of my Enochlith told me, Saba Ani Ba'Avelut, I am in mourning. I silently said to myself, Shehiyanu v'kimonu v'kiyanu l'azman hazeh. That's kapora for the Chet HaMeraglim. I asked this fellow, tell me, how many of your grandchildren say that they are in Avelot after the fall of Gush Katif? And by the way, are you in Avelot? Go ask your posek, if you see the ruins of Gush Katif, are you supposed to tear Kriya al Ore Yehuda de Khurbanam? You're all saying we lost. You didn't lose? Why is this only our loss? You lost the Shtik Eretz Yisrael! But you don't even realize that you lost it. My ankle knows. Your ankle doesn't know. He may know, maybe, I'm not so sure. I was going to say, maybe he knows a black Gemara more than my ankle. I'm not so sure. My ankle may be in Avelus over the Lord of Gush Katif and know a black Gemara more than he does as well. And then, I haven't even begun to scratch the surface of what the Dati Lumi community has done in this country. And all of this nonsense you only concentrated on Eretz Yisrael. And yes, what about 200 yeshuvim that were built? Building a yeshuv doesn't involve chesed, unity, working together. What's the difference if that community is Shiloh or Eli? It's only good if it's outside of Petah Tikva. And then if I needed something, my greatest ammunition. And back to the Haaretz. I'm going to finish with this. Every morning you should know. I take the paper out. I open it up and I know that there's going to be something on the front page with it that's going to give me such aggravation. Such aggravation. It's been that way. One morning a few weeks ago I go down. I open up the paper. I don't know what hit me. There's a big color picture of a man with a kippah surah Yeah. Well, don't mind the beer.
Yeah, yeah.
Pras Nobel? Yeah. Professor Yisraelonon?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it occurs to me, this Dapilu Meat community, who we've been told, has for 30 years forgotten everything about Eretz Yisrael, except Eretz Yisrael. We're involved in every sphere of life. We're in medicine, we're in business, we're in psychology, we're in high tech. Every area of life we are making contributions, and great contributions. I'm so thrilled about all of those secular professors in Hebrew University that are eating themselves up alive. So I don't understand. Why do we stand for this? Why do we let people get away with talking about the crisis in the Dati Lumi community? We're a bunch of sickos. We have to make a cheshbon ha-nefesh. You know who has to make a cheshbon ha-nefesh? The ones who destroyed Gush Katif. The ones who participated in the destruction. And the ones who remained silent while it took place. They have to make the cheshbon ha-nefesh. Our consciences are clean. We fought for Eretz Yisrael. Nonsense. We are the healthy community of Eretz Yisrael. Don't let anybody make a patient out of you. You're not patients. You're not patients. You're strong. You're healthy. You've got something that the rest don't have. The sort of accomplishment of our community unparalleled in this country. Unparalleled. We've been the victims of a horrible betrayal. Yes. We have been betrayed. The people of Medinat Yisrael, the people of Chalom, the minimalists, are the ones who have betrayed us. And then there are those who should have been standing at our side and did not. And there are those who remain silent. In America, in Canada, here, in the Orthodox community, in the modern Orthodox community, in the Haredi community, they remain silent. They're the ones that have to make the cheshbon ha-nefesh. Nah, us. I'll leave you with one last part, because this is clearly what Avraham Avinu said. My wife took this off of the internet a few years ago. She printed it out. And of course, if you print it out, it's a good word, and she wants me to learn it. So she puts it on the fridge. From the fridge, it impressed me so much, I made a little copy of it, and I put it on my address book. I am ready to admit, I can't use a Palm Pilot. I wouldn't know what to do with it. I can't use a blackberry, a blueberry, a raspberry. Garnish me, garnish. So I use an address book and I write with a pen. On my address book it says the following. And this is exactly what Avraham Avinu tells us. Edmund Burke once said, "The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing." I'm going to say it once more. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. There were many men, many good men, who did nothing, and they permitted the destruction of Gush Katif. We don't need the cheshbon ha-nefesh. We're not sick. We're a healthy, strong, vibrant community. We're going to pull out of it, and we're going to go on to far, far greater and better things in B'ez Hashem. Chag Sameach.